This weekend, only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Hope and despair walk side by side on the road to Rivendell. Frodo's wound festers, the Black Riders linger, and even Strider's confidence wavers. And yet, hope is not gone. Not all weapons are made of steel. Not all signs are announced by trumpets. Sometimes, hope is a simple fire, or the aroma of an ancient healing herb, or a stone left on a bridge. Today we continue our journey through the Fellowship of the Ring in the chapter Flight to the Ford, where even in the shadow of the enemy, the smallest things can change the course of fate.
I'm Aaron, your host and guide to wandering Middle-earth, especially for first-time readers of Tolkien's works. Visit ringspodcast.com to find my free downloadable guides for reading The Silmarillion and other works by J.R.R. Tolkien. Now, let's wander. Before we wander, let's take a moment to check the map and see where we've been, where we are, and where the road might lead next.
Frodo, Sam, Merry, and Pippin set out from the Shire, fleeing the mysterious Black Riders. Their journey takes them through the Old Forest, where they meet the enigmatic Tom Bombadil, and then to the eerie Barrowdowns, where they narrowly escape a sinister fate. Arriving in Bree, the hobbits meet Strider, a weathered ranger who offers his aid. When the Black Riders attack their rooms at the inn, they slip away into the night, guided by Strider toward Rivendell. The journey through the wilderness is slow and weary. On the Hill of Weathertop, the company is discovered by Black Riders. Frodo, overwhelmed by terror, puts on the ring and is stabbed by the Witch King with a Morgul blade. The fire still burns, small, flickering, but alive. It's the only light in a night filled with dread. Frodo is wounded. The Black Riders have vanished into the darkness, but their presence lingers like a cold shadow over Weathertop. And now the company, what's left of it, is alone. Just hobbits, huddled around the fire, trying to keep it alive. I love that little detail, the fire. It's easy to overlook, but the contrast is so stark. The Nazgûl bring cold, an unnatural, creeping chill that saps the strength from those who oppose them. But the hobbits, for all their fear and uncertainty, have warmth. It's something so simple, a small flame, a little defiance. And yet, in the grand scheme of things, it's profound. In Middle-earth, warmth, whether literal like this fire, or metaphorical like courage and camaraderie, is tied to goodness. Evil isolates, it numbs, it chills. Goodness gathers, warms, and restores. Of course, the Black Riders don't seem concerned about the hobbits or their fire. They've attacked, wounded the Ringbearer, and now they wait. That's interesting. They don't press the advantage. They think they've already won. And this isn't just a tactical decision. It's hubris. Their entire approach hinges on the idea that their enemy is weak, that Frodo's wound will do their work for them, that he can't fly any further. Why risk more direct confrontation when time and fear will wear them down? This assumption, this arrogance, is so often the downfall of evil in Tolkien's world. Over and over again, we see it. The forces of darkness miscalculate. They assume victory before it's secure. They underestimate those they oppose. They don't expect resistance, and certainly not from sources they deem insignificant. And yet, time and again, it's those very small, unexpected resistances that unravel them. This small example is a tiny foreshadowing for how we will eventually observe the end of evil in The Lord of the Rings. Strider has been everything on this journey so far. Guide, protector, and now, as always, a quiet symbol of hope. Because Sam, loyal and practical Sam, is despairing. What does Strider say? Quote, "Don't despair." Simple, direct, and coming from him, weighty. Because if anyone has the right to despair, it's Aragorn. He knows the darkness of the world. He knows the odds. He's seen firsthand the power of the enemy they face. And even in the face of all that, he does not give in to despair. This moment is so human, it's so real. Perhaps you felt the creeping doubt of hopelessness, that there's nothing more to be done to change it. But then a voice, a mentor, a friend, a leader says, don't despair. It's not a command to ignore reality. It's an invitation to see beyond it, to recognize that while evil waits, biding its time in overconfidence, those who oppose it still have choices, still have agency, still have fire. And then Strider says something else, something small but meaningful. About Frodo, he says, quote, he is made of sterner stuff than I had guessed. Earlier, back in the chapter titled Strider, he had said that these hobbits wouldn't last long in the wilderness unless they were made of sterner stuff than they appeared. And now here we see it. Frodo is not the same hobbit who left the Shire. He is wounded, yes, but he is enduring. There's more to him than anyone, even Strider, initially realized. This is another theme that we see so often in The Lord of the Rings. Things are not always what they seem. Frodo, a small and unassuming hobbit, carries hidden reserves of strength. Strider, a ragged wanderer, is actually a king in exile. Even Sam, still wary of Strider, still hesitant to fully trust him, will come to see just how deep his own courage runs. Again and again, we are reminded that the surface tells only part of the story. Strider exemplifies what it means to have hope, even when all seems lost. Quote, I will do all that I can. He doesn't make a grand, heroic declaration, not a promise of certain victory, just this, I will do what I can. That's it. In this moment, in the wilderness, far from fanfare or trumpets, in the dark after an attack, it's in moments like this that heroes are revealed. In this moment, this small moment, doing what he can, Strider wins the War of the Ring. And that is profound, because let's be honest, most of us aren't called to epic heroism. We don't wield legendary swords or stand on the front lines of great battles. But what we are called to do is what we can do, all that we can do. And that is enough. That is everything. So here we are. The fire still burns, the Black Riders wait in the dark, and the road ahead is uncertain. But there is warmth. There is resilience. There is the quiet promise of hope, spoken by a ranger who knows the weight of despair, but refuses to yield to it. And that, my fellow wanderer, is worth holding on to. Before we go on, I have a favor to ask of you. Frodo has his friends to help him find the light after the attack of the Black Riders. Likewise, you may have a friend who could use a little light and hope. I'm here to be a light and share the light of Tolkien's words with all. Tap that share button and send your friend a link to this episode. The night fades, light grows, and with it, Strider returns again. The hobbits have kept watch over Frodo, but his wound lingers, its effects deepening. And now we see just how strange this weapon is. The tip of the blade that struck Frodo has broken off, but its whereabouts remain a mystery. A piece of it is missing. This small, unnoticed detail carries a weight that stretches far beyond this moment. It echoes back to the First Age, to the tale of Beren and Lúthien, when Beren's knife chipped as he stole a Silmaril from Morgoth's crown. A tiny sliver of metal, a fragment of a blade, seemed so insignificant, until it glanced on Morgoth's cheek and woke all the powers of darkness against Beren. Little things, tiny acts, pieces of a greater whole, they have consequences that ripple through time. And here, in Frodo's wound, in the missing shard, we see again that the smallest details can alter the course of fate. But there is another weapon at play here, one that is not steel. Strider reveals that more deadly to the Nazgul than blades was the name of Elbereth. And this, I think, is worth pausing on. Elbereth, or Varda, is one of the most powerful beings in Tolkien's legendarium, a queen of the Valar who resides in the Undying Lands. She is the one who set the stars in the sky, a force of light against darkness. The fact that her name alone causes the Black Riders to recoil tells us something profound. There is power in invocation, in calling upon the highest forces of good. It is not just about swords and shields. It is about what one believes in, what one clings to in the face of fear. Strider knows this. He also knows that few now have the skill to heal a wound inflicted by such evil. and yet he does not throw up his hands in defeat. Instead, he does what he can. He sings over the blade before it vanishes, performing some unnamed rite. What exactly is he doing? We don't know. Song in Middle-earth is power. In fact, it is the very power that shaped and created the earth. And Strider, in this moment, uses what power he has in song. He also uses Ethelas. It is a simple plant with ancient origins. It is a remnant of Numenor, the ancient island kingdom of men from which Aragorn is descended. We may even suspect that Ethelas is a gift that originally came from the Undying Lands. Again, we see how echoes of the past, remnants of the great stories that came before, still shape the present. And in the hands of a ranger, and specifically the future king, Ethelas is a healing power. And as Strider works, Frodo reflects. He realizes something troubling. He gave in. The will of the Nazgul was stronger than his own. He put on the ring because they compelled him. And now he may be changed forever, quote, maimed for life. His journey is no longer just about carrying a burden. It is about living with the wounds it inflicts. And Strider too wonders, was Weathertop a mistake? Choices, wounds, consequence. These are the themes at play in this small scene, and they are far from over.
This weekend, only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
The journey must continue. Frodo is wounded, the Black Riders lurk in the shadows, but stopping is not an option. And so the small company presses on, leaving Weathertop behind, taking a path off the beaten road, weaving through the hills and wildlands of Eriador. 5 days of off-trail hiking, 5 days of trudging through rough terrain, before they finally return to the road to cross the river at the last bridge. Now let's pause here for a moment. If you are reading The Lord of the Rings for the first time after seeing the films, this part may surprise you. In the movie, this whole stretch is streamlined, compressed into a rapid series of events that get us from Weathertop to Rivendell as quickly as possible. But here in the book, time moves differently. There's a long journey between these two points, filled with exhaustion, uncertainty, and small moments of significance that don't make the cinematic cut. And this, I think, is part of what makes the book so compelling. Tolkien allows space for the journey to unfold in its proper time. This brings us to the last bridge, a critical crossing point. And here, something happens that lifts Strider's spirits. As he scouts ahead, he finds a small green stone lying on the bridge. A simple thing, easily overlooked. But for Strider, it is a good omen. Quote, "It brings me hope," he says. A significant shift, given that just days before, quote, even Strider seemed tired and heavy-hearted. Now what's the deal with this stone? It's a symbol, certainly, but it's also a sign that another force has passed this way before them. While the book leaves this somewhat open-ended, later notes tell us that Glorfindel, a powerful elf lord who serves Elrond, left it as a message. This is a brilliant little detail. Instead of a grand, sweeping declaration of aid, it's something small, subtle and yet incredibly meaningful to those who know how to read it. And isn't that how hope works? It doesn't always arrive in blaring trumpets or great pronouncements. Sometimes it's just a small green stone, lying in the mud on a lonely bridge, a quiet assurance that you are not alone. Now, speaking of bridges, if you've read The Hobbit, you might recall something interesting. Before Bilbo and the dwarves encountered the infamous trolls, they first crossed a river over, quote, an ancient stone bridge. Only after they had crossed did they run into their first real danger on the road. Here, in Fellowship of the Ring, the company has not yet encountered the stone trolls. And why? Because they haven't crossed the bridge yet. This is a tiny geographic detail, but it's one of those subtle echoes that tie Tolkien's world together, reminding us that there's a certain rhythm to the way these journeys unfold. And that brings me to another point, the question of where exactly Strider is leading them. The geography of this section is a little ambiguous, and Tolkien, being the meticulous world builder that he was, left multiple interpretations of their exact route. If you're a map enthusiast or a deep lore tracker, then The Atlas of Middle-earth by Karen Wynne Fonstad is an absolute treasure. On page 100, she outlines two different possible paths that Strider takes after the last bridge, and you can compare those to the route that Thorin and company took in The Hobbit. It is one of those details that adds a whole extra layer of depth to the journey, especially if you enjoy seeing how these different stories interweave across time and space. And here's something for the real deep-cut Tolkien fans. The stone bridge in The Hobbit? That wasn't in the original publication. It was a revision, added later. Why? Well, part of it has to do with a minor discrepancy in travel times between The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. Tolkien had even drafted an unpublished revision to The Hobbit to reconcile these inconsistencies, which you can find in the History of Middle-earth. But ultimately, as Karen Fonstad wisely puts it, quote, rather than analyze too closely, it is preferable we merely gain a general impression of the seemingly endless toil necessary to reach the lonely mountain. And I might add, to reach the mountain of fire, where the One Ring will be unmade. Because in the end, that's what these journeys are about. The endless toil, the slow, weary, uncertain plodding towards something greater. The last bridge is not just a crossing. It's a small step forward, another moment of endurance, another hint that hope is still alive, even when the road is long.
Thank you to this episode's executive producer, The Old One. If you would like to support the Lore of the Rings podcast, visit ringspodcast.com/member. If you found today's Wandering of Middle-earth to be inspiring, please share this episode with a friend. Lastly, if you would like to connect with me, I am most active on Threads. Find a link to my profile at ringspodcast.com and tap the at symbol near the top. And thank you for Wandering Middle-earth with me today.
This weekend only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.